Okay, we're going to call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is February 11th, and the time is 9 o'clock. And Senate members present currently is Co-Chairman Kelly, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Bishop, and Vice Chairman Senator Fairclough. So we do have a quorum to conduct business. And today we are going to start the overview of the capital budget. And so we're going to, it's Senate Bill 18, capital budget. And we're going to start out with Fish and Game, and then DEC, and then Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And we'll go through this as quickly as we can. And we'll try to get through all of the agencies by the end of the week. It may carry over to the following week, but we'll just see how quickly it progresses. So if there's no questions from the committee members, I'd like to invite Mr. Brooks with the Department of Fish and Game first. You can be the first one out of the chute or the first one we shoot, I guess, whichever way you want to look at it. No, we're a friendly group. I think what we'll do is just, because we have all the information, and hopefully we'll be able to follow each other here in the same order. We'll let you go through the items, and then we'll just circle the items that we have questions on, and then once you're done, we'll go back to those particular items. So that way you can go through them fairly quickly. Like I said, we have all the information on them. If there's a particular big item, though, you may want to spend a little more time on that. Senator Kelly?
Through the chair, Senator Kelly, actually they're the same, so I would be going off this spreadsheet does follow the order in the bill. So,
okay. Thank you, Senator Kelly. Yeah, I'm going to be going through the binder here, so because it does have all the backup with it, and also Senator Hoffman has joined us. Welcome. So with that, Mr. Brooks, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Kevin Brooks, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Fish and Game. With me in the room today, I have Charlie Swanton, our Director of Sport Fish, and online we should have Jeff Regnard, our Director of Commercial Fisheries, as well as Tom Brookover, who's a Deputy Director of Sport Fish and also our project coordinator for our Chinook research initiative. Also in the room is Ben Mulligan, our legislative liaison, and Carol Petterborg from our Administrative Services Division. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to the committee this morning about capital projects for the Department of Fish and Game. We have seven in all, totaling $16,630,000, of which $14,380,000 is general fund and $2,250,000 is federal funds. With that general lead-in, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to start with our first top priority for the department is a $10 million.
Okay, Mr. Brooks, if we could. So everybody in your binders, you should be at Fish and Game, and there'll be a cover sheet, and you're just going to go through each item. And then behind the cover sheet, then, is the detail on each particular item. Okay, Mr. Brooks, go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first item is the Chinook Salmon Research Initiative for $10 million in GF. It's reference number 57021. Mr. Chairman, this is the first of it's a five-year initiative and that would total $30 million. As we would propose it, Mr. Chairman, it's $10 million in the current year. It's in response to Chinook salmon declines across the state. There was a disaster declaration in July and August that named several stocks. In October, the department undertook a Chinook symposium in Anchorage for 2 days, gathered scientists from around the state and our federal counterparts and also with the university and just interested citizens across the state to discuss and analyze the causes of the declines in Chinook stocks. We developed from there a gap analysis. Many of you, I think all of you, have received a copy of our this red book that is our research plan. and it calls out work on 12 indicator river systems across the state, ranging from the Yukon down to southeast Alaska. We'd be proposing to do adult and juvenile work, as well as genetics and code wire tagging and other types of a scientific backup for the effort. And it would include efforts also, Mr. Chairman, by the university. They had a $3 million or $3.1 million request in their budget that would be contemplated to be covered within the $30 million over the five-year period. We're working very collaboratively with the university. Their scientists are on our research team. And we're also working with the federal government, all three bodies, the state, the feds, and the university, bring different levels of expertise to the table. And
you have questions.
And so we have people in the room that can talk this one. But if we're holding questions, I mean, this is the largest item in our budget. And I don't know if you want to talk about this one now or wait till the end, but
well, yeah, I think thank you, Mr. Brooks. I think, as I mentioned, I think we would like to just kind of highlight those items and then go back after your presentation, so we get through your presentation for sure. Otherwise, we could get hung up just on one item. So if that's okay with committee members, if you have a question on this particular item, just make a note, then we'll come back to it at the end.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. Then the next item I would talk to you about then is aerial photosensus capability to monitor wildlife. It's for $750,000 in GF, reference number 56969. And, Mr. Chairman, our aerial survey is one of the primary tools that we have for enumerating ungulates on the landscape. We're currently using 40-year-old technology that takes 9x9-inch Polaroids when our pilots fly over, and then we piece those together and count caribou. This would modernize that effort. It would give us digital cameras as well as the supporting software. The current film that we're using is no longer being manufactured. The film is not being manufactured, so we're really using up existing stocks and cannot fix that. So, again, a vital piece of our our surveying for wildlife and replacing outdated technology. Mr. Chairman, our third item, Fish and Game Licensing Modernization Project for $775,000 is reference number 45358. This would contemplate replacement of our licensing system. We first brought online license sales in 1999. And over the years, we've done some refinements to that. But our process is still very paper intense. There's over 700,000 pieces of stock sold a year, generating about $25 million through about 1,100 vendors statewide. And what we'd like to do is improve customer service, increase our online sales, automate our vendor processes so they can do automated reporting to us instead of the current paper process. And then also incorporate many of our disparate subsystems like big game draw permits, personal use fishery reporting, sport fish charter and guide log books, McNeil River bear viewing, those types of things that are all kind of standalone subsystems into a comprehensive data set. So this would also propose to use a $2 million reappropriation. It's in Section 13 of the bill. It was for a Kodiak Near Island facility that is complete and will be opened this spring, and so we would be proposing to use that unexpended appropriation along with this $775,000 for a total of $2,775,000. Mr. Chairman, the next item on the list is the Sportfish Recreational Boating Access Project for $3 million, reference number 30432. This is an annual request. Members of the committee may be familiar with this. It's funded by a 15% set-aside on our federal funds that are derived from an excise tax on fishing tackle and boat motor fuel and those types of things. Requires it's a 3-to-1 match, and so we're proposing $2,250,000 federal funds, $750,000 general fund match, and this would address boating access projects across the state. Mr. Chairman, the next item, statewide sport fishing surveys for $250,000 in GF, reference number 42115. This project would fund two surveys, our statewide stock waters economic survey and also our economic impacts and contribution of sport fishing in Alaska survey. We last did one of these 5 years ago in 2007. It was 2007 data that was surveyed, and our commitment at the time was that this would be an item that would be updated every 5 years. Just to document the contribution of sport fishing to the economy. We have a pretty straightforward means of doing that on the commercial side through X vessel value and other landing and fish ticket data that we keep, but this goes into greater detail on the sport fishing recreational side and documenting that contribution to the economy, which is very significant. Chairman, the next item then is a facilities vessel and aircraft maintenance repair and upgrades for $500,000 GF, reference number 43322. This is another project that is tends to be an annual request for us. We have we're located in over 40 locations around the state where we have permanent offices as well as our field camps and other infrastructure that we use for managing our game and fish resources. This would be shared among our small facilities repairs as well as our research vessels in the Division of Comfish as well as our aircraft in both Comfish and Wildlife. And we have a list that we do for our backlog. We address the most critical needs and keep those the vessels and aircraft in good repair so that there's no safety issues for our employees and also our facilities as well. Finally, Mr. Chairman, we have another deferred maintenance renewal repair and equipment project for $1,355,000. It's reference number 45482. This is part of the governor's statewide deferred maintenance initiative, and it represents some of our larger projects. Depending on the type of project we have, if it has any size or substance to it, it's going to dominate the smaller requests that we just talked about. And this particular request has three allocations included in it, those being a statewide fish passages, counting and sampling site, weir facility, maintenance repair for $800,000, our warehouse and workshop facilities for $400,000, and then our smaller field camps and camp facilities for $155,000. And those three allocations total the $1,355,000. And again, this is a recurring annual quest. I think we're in the fourth of 5 years on the governor's deferred maintenance initiative. Mr. Chairman, that's the extent of the seven projects that the department has, and we would be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Okay, I think we do have some questions. Senator Kelly.
Morning, Kevin. I have two kind of categories. One is your deferred maintenance request. I know that's part of the governor's initiative of the overall $100 million. My question is, does this allow you to actually decrease your backlog, or is this just keeping steady, this request?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelly.
Thank you.
You know, with deferred maintenance, it seems like the more frequently we get out, we're adding new projects. Certainly, projects are going to go off the list. We have some very critical needs on those, and we're addressing the most most urgent ones. But I think the short answer is yes, it does decrease it, but there's new projects that tend to find their way onto the list as we get out and talk to the folks in the field.
As you know, our maintenance backlog in the state is so huge that even when we try to take chunks out of it, all we do is stay at the level we were the year before. Second question, a couple on the research. One is, does your red book that you have there, does that describe the research from the different agencies? I'm particularly interested in, are you using the university for the ocean research portion of it? And streams, you said they had a $3 million request of the $10 million. Is that mostly ocean-related?
Through the chair, Senator Kelly, I think there's probably better folks on the line could answer that specifically.
You know what? That's not necessary. It's described in the
record. It does describe the word.
If you could just make sure. I may have one, but if I don't, if you could make sure that I just get that, and I'll page through that on my own time.
And just a point of clarification, you had mentioned $3 million of the 10 is the university, and I don't want to mislead the committee. $3 million of the overall $30 million initiative.
Oh, I see.
Would be, so it would be prorated out.
Okay.
You could think of it as a million of the 10, but
okay.
It would be done through RSAs with the university on a prorated share of that.
Got it.
Hello?
In your research, excuse me, Mr. Chairman,
sorry, go ahead.
Continue on that topic. In your research, are you looking for like what we do with bycatch and the size of nets and those kinds of things? Do you know?
Through the chair, Senator Kelly, yes, those aspects would be included in the in the research plan. It's really trying to identify throughout the whole life cycle what are the causes of mortality, and it would start with smolt out migration, and we'd be enumerating smolt. There are predators and survival issues in the stream, in the nearshore marine environment, when they're out at sea for 3 or 4 years growing, bycatch is part of that,
okay.
and then when they return as adults, so it would be looking at the complete life cycle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Senator Kelly. Senator Dellavedova.
Through the chair, thank you. Along those lines, and Kevin, you and I have talked about the Susitna river drainage is having some serious issues. In this research, will you also, would it be just high seas, or will you also be looking at, as you said, issues with potential pike, beaver dams, water quality within the actual streams that the fish go into to breed? What's the extent of the research?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dunleavy, I think I would like to call a lifeline here and see if we have maybe Mr. Brookover would be the place to start there, and then we have the director standing by as well.
Mr. Brookover, are you online, sir? Tom Brookover. Your lifeline may not be there.
I'll defer to Mr. Swanton in the room then.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dembélévy, yes, there are elements of this that have to do with pike predation in fresh water as smolts migrate. But there is parts of the university that are working on such things as changes in water flow, temperature, more fresh water, more environmentally mediated effects. But there's a wide array of those sorts of activities. Hopefully that answers your question, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
Just a follow up. The plan, does it cover all of the affected watersheds, or will it be a kind of a survey of some? In other words, many parts of the state, many of the Senate districts are impacted by what appears to be a lack of return of kings, and in our situation up north, it's just not kings, it's silvers. But will this study go into all of these watersheds and take a look at all these issues? And the reason I ask that is if we're going to do a study, the suggestion would be that we do a comprehensive study to eliminate issues. If it is pike, then we know and we can deal with it. If it's not pike, we take that off the table. If it's water quality, if it's water temperature, et cetera, work our way right down these lists so we can try and figure out exactly what the issue is. So to what extent is it going to be a detailed look at all these watersheds?
You know, if we could, too, since we are switching speakers, if you could put your name on the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Charlie Swanton, Director of Division of Sport Fish, Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Senator Dunleavy, what we've essentially done, there's over 220 Chinook salmon stocks spread out across the state. What we've done is we've selected 12 more on a regional basis, throughout the state that we believe represent various life history approaches, migration pathways, and prominence within, you know, Chinook salmon production across the state. From those and the work that we're planning on doing in those drainages, we can make inferences to the other systems, such as the Susitna, which is the largest drainage. There is quite a few, as you were well aware, Chinook salmon stocks within that drainage. What we're trying to do is get a comprehensive estimate of the total number of Chinook, at least for adults, that come back to that system and where they go and how many are in each one of those drainages, amongst a whole array of other information that we're collecting. But pike predation and those sorts of activities are being investigated, and we can make inferences to where pike are located, where they're not endemic, in the Yukon and those sorts of systems, where they are endemic. We're looking at that as well. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question goes back to many of the concerns that were brought up last year from the Fish and Game Subcommittee regarding numerous millions of dollars going into research. And I think every committee member signed the letter saying that we need to be, as a state, more proactive. And of the $16.6 million, I don't see anything that will add one salmon back into the streams of Alaska. You know, and I think that at the time, Senator Huggins brought up the Alexander Creek story, where it's believed that it was probably another species that caused the problem there, but going back, there were literally millions of salmon over a decade in that creek, and today there's none. So the problem, you know, I guess that I see is that we should be spending at least some of our capital project dollars being proactive to get more salmon, particularly Chinook salmon, back into the streams. And I just came back from a weekend down in southeast to visit the Tamgus Creek Fishery Hatchery. Are you aware of that hatchery? Probably not. It's not a state hatchery. It's a very, very successful hatchery that's operated by the community of Metlakatla. And they have an operation program of between $600,000 and $700,000, and they produce 15 million broodstock back into the streams every year. And what I found amazing was that close to 5 million of those are Chinook. And for that community of 1,200 people, they have an abundance of king salmon. And when they harvest that for personal use, subsistence, and for commercial use, they then go and sell a large number of those into Ketchikan. So I guess with the problems that we're having throughout the state of Alaska, we have a community doing something on their own, bringing back, they're releasing 15 million salmon and having better than average return, rate of return of the salmon to their stocks. If we are having this crisis in the state of Alaska, and it was expressed last year, and we were hopeful to see the department being more proactive, coming up with proposals to add more salmon while we're studying the problems, you know, that we should be at least trying to get the stocks back up, because it's not unproven technology. They have been operating this hatchery since the early 1980s, and started out primarily trying to concentrate on Chinook. So why, with the vast decline of Chinook throughout the state of Alaska, why aren't we as a state being more proactive, like a small community of Metlakatla, which is an example and a success story for bringing back not only Chinook, but Chum and other species.
I think good point, Senator Hoffman. A lot to digest there.
Thank you, Senator. Through the chair, Senator Hoffman. The enhancement efforts are certainly part of what the department is looking at, and you correctly point out last year there were some things put into the budget, and enhancement efforts have been underway up in the AYK region on four distinct projects that were added. But the department has worked on a plan and an approach for using hatchery production to help mitigate the effects of the Chinook decline, as well as other declines and of other stocks. But and the scientists on the phone can add some content to this, but I know that the issues are complex, certainly where you have mixed stocks, and if you're it depends, you know, there's a lot of importance on where your release sites are, so you're not maybe causing more trouble to existing wild stocks by releasing fish in an area where they might mix and then be have additional harvest on some of the stocks that we're having challenges with. But clearly hatchery and enhancement efforts have to be part of our solution, because it's going to be a long-term proposal to get these stocks turned around. And with a 3 to 5 year life cycle, we're talking, even if we take eggs this year, it's going to take some years to get fish back in the river. And we can do some of that through release sites on lakes, and maybe trying to provide some alternatives while we're working on bringing the salmon stocks back. We have now both of our state-run hatcheries are up and running, and we have are producing fish there. And then we're working with our PMPs as well. So the solution to this, I think, is going to involve a lot of partners and contributors. We've in the initiative would propose many contracts with local groups, Norton Sound Economic Development Council, and others that the department has a long history with in both the management aspects as well as enhancement aspects. And I guess I would ask Director Swanton if he had any additional comments on enhancements.
If you'd like, we can try Mr. Brookover again, because he does seem to be online. It's just maybe his phone's on mute or something. So, Mr. Brookover, are you available?
Yes, Mr. Chair, can you hear me?
Yeah, there you go. If you could put your name on the record, please. And I hopefully you've heard the discussion and some of the questions that have come up. Do you have anything else to add?
Mr. Chair, Tom Brookover for the record with Fish and Game in Anchorage. And I have heard the discussion, yes, and I would concur with what Mr. Brooks had to say. We do have a department effort that's been underway, not only to develop the research plan, but also to look at what management and enhancement actions we might be able to take in the short term. We engaged our staff and with staff of the nonprofit, private nonprofit hatchery organizations, and went through a discussion with that group to look at hatchery considerations that could be undertaken and considered in the near term. And that group met, I think, as recently as about a month ago to basically finalize a plan for consideration of hatchery projects as a means to you know, mitigate the impacts of some of the low Chinook returns we've seen. That report was actually just published and is available, and we can certainly make that available to the committee. Other than that, I don't have too much to add, but I can answer any questions.
Okay. Senator Hoffman.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you know, I met with the mayor of Metlakatla and went out and viewed the Tamsgas Creek fishery, and if you take one-third of the cost of $800,000 for operational, you're not talking about very much money to bring in 5 million broodstock into the system. And they said that there would be more than interest interested in having maybe the Fish and Game Subcommittee go out there, since it's such a right outside of Ketchikan. I haven't talked to the chairman yet, but I think that it would be an eye-opener for people to see what they are doing, the private industry, not private, but quasi-governmental entity that they're doing that we as a state aren't doing. And I think people will be just amazed at what's happening. And it's, you know, we're talking right here, $6.6 million, and not one salmon being added to the stocks. And what they're doing to add 15 million brood stock for $800,000 is a success story. And it's happening in Alaska, but it's not happening by the state of Alaska. And that, I think, the people of this state prize our Chinook as the most sought-after salmon. But last year's budget and this year's budget, we don't see anything in the capital budget to be proactive to add one more salmon to the stocks. And I understand, you know, the life cycle of Chinook. And you say it's not going to happen because immediately because of 5 years. But if you don't do anything this year, it's just going to be further. The longer you wait, the longer it's going to take to address the problem. The problem isn't getting better, but at least we should be doing something to bring more salmon back while we're studying the problem. Otherwise, we're going to end up with the Alexander Creek story. I don't know who ate that last salmon in Alexander Creek, but I don't want someone to eat the last king salmon on the Kuskokwim.
All right. Good point, Senator Hoffman. And just like we're trying to put more oil in the pipe, we're trying to put more fish in the river here. So very similar situation.
Get the message.
And I think your point is good, that perhaps the subcommittee should go down. And, you know, if you got a success story, we want to use best practice, and that may be. Senator Kelly, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the questions I have, the hatchery at Fairbanks, they don't produce kings up there, do they?
Mr. Chairman, Charlie Swanton, Fish and Game, Senator Kelly, yes, they do, but at the present time, they are for catchable releases, so they're into the lakes. They're not an anadromous release. We also do coho salmon as well in the same format. They are released into various lakes and ponds for both open water as well as ice fishing opportunities. Mr. Chairman?
For king salmon stock in the Yukon, would that be a useful facility?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelly, there is presently capacity in that facility as well as the facility in Anchorage. It's just a matter of configuration and operating costs for those additional an appropriate project in terms of what Director Brooks was referring to in terms of not exacerbating or wild stocks in terms of intermingling. There's generally issues associated with that in terms of harvest rates with hatchery-reared fish versus wild stocks. Mr. Chairman.
Would you do me a favor, and would you contact Senator Bishop? You're the operating budget chair, subcommittee chair, correct, for Fish and Game, and you're on as well. Senator Hoffman, are you on the committee? Would you provide to them what we need to do in the operating budget to achieve what you just said this year, or in FY14? And as the chair, I would certainly entertain whatever these guys come up with to make this happen.
Okay. Senator Dunleavy.
There appears to be, and I'm not going to go ask you for detail now, but there appears to be a philosophy that hatchery stocks and wild stocks should not be mixed. But what happens if you're at the point where your wild stocks either are close to being extinct or non-existent? Does that philosophy change when it comes to hatchery fish?
Mr. Chairman, Charlie Swanton, Fish and Game, Senator Dunleavy, there are approaches to what we would refer to And it's been done a fair amount in the Pacific Northwest where they're dealing with ESA listed and very, very low abundance of wild stocks, where they do what referred to as supplementation, whereby they take eggs, fertilized eggs, rear those or in a hatchery environment to maximize survival, and then release the fry and or smolt back into the wild environment. So that is, you know, actually a lot of those particular activities are referenced in this document that Deputy Director Brookover referred to in terms of enhancement, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. Well, $30 million is a lot of money, and I think the committee is okay if it meets the end goal of more fish in the river. But certainly, as we heard from Senator Hoffman, if there's a better way, a less expensive way, we would hope that that will be explored as well. And I share the same thoughts with the co-chair that if the subcommittee wants to go to Metlakatla, I think that would be money well served too. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back on reference number 43-32-2 for $500,000. It's the facility vessel and aircraft maintenance, repair and upgrades, renewal and replacement. Can you tell me what the average age of your vessels and aircrafts are, and if we're this is the lowest appropriation since 2007 that you're requesting. Just like to know where we're at on target with our fleet.
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, I could certainly provide you with that. I don't have the specific inventory with us. It's a bit. Our fleet is a bit aged, I would say. I mean, they're older vessels that we continue to put money into. We kind of balance that amount with the other deferred maintenance that we had on the book that we're asking for, as well as money that we have from the previous year's appropriation. So we think we can stay busy on the projects that we have with the $500,000. But you're correct in noting that it is less than it has been in recent years.
Oh.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a follow-up. I just would point the committee to look at prior year's funding where for replacement and renewal that we've spent $1 million, probably on average $700,000, and this is substantially less to keep the fleet moving. So I just wonder the age of the vehicles when we're looking at roads and other repair. I certainly want aircraft to be well maintained.
That's a good point. Senator Bishop.
Yes, Kevin, thanks for your presentation. In essence of time, I have some questions. I'm just going to run through them, and you can respond or not respond, but get back with my staff. I would appreciate it. First off, I want to echo Senator Hoffman's comments, and I've been supporting a concept like that for over 30 years on the Yukon River. With that being said, and not to pile on the department, that's not my point, but I want to see a conclusion at the end of the study with outcomes that's going to put more fish, king salmons, in the river systems around the state.
Mr. Chairman, that we all share that goal.
Okay. So real quick, briefly, just I want to get it on the record. I'm a little concerned, some questions about the licensing and changing technology. I can share it. You can do a follow-up in my office. I've got those concerns. I'm all in support of enhancing the system to do it better, but I'm concerned about making sure that nobody's left out that doesn't have technology available. Just for grins, I'd like to know the list of sites for the upgrades for the boat launches, and you can come by the office and we can talk about those. On 42115, I've got an idea there where we may be able to share to save some money. And on the $500,000 request, Senator Fairclough asked my question. I have one more follow-up on that as well, and that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Excuse me. Any other questions for the Fish and Game Department? If not, then we'll go on to the next department. Appreciate your presentation, Mr. Brooks.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Everyone else who joined you. And with that, let's take a brief at ease, give some time here to get the DEC folks up. Okay, we'll bring the Senate Finance Committee back to order now with this. We should be Department of Environmental Conservation, and hopefully everybody's found that tab in their binder, in their book. And so I think I have Mr. Chiron, is that correct? Okay, we haven't met yet. Welcome to Senate Finance. And it looks like you have brought someone with you, if they could introduce themselves as well, if they're going to be speaking. So with that, I will turn it over to you. Again, if you could reiterate your name and who you're representing.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Chiron, Director of Administrative Services, Department of Environmental Conservation. And with me is Bill Griffith. He manages the Village Safe Water and the Municipal Matching Grants and Loans Program. I also have my budget manager, Jeff Rogers, in the audience.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, the total FY14 request for DEC is $96,905,837. Of that, $42,250,000 is from federal funding. About $3.8 million from other funding sources, that's the Alaska Clean Water and Drinking Water Funds, and about $50.7 million from the general fund. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to follow the spreadsheet. The first project is Village Safe Water Project. The reference number is 41376, it's the page number one. The request is for $51,500,000 for the Village Safe Water Projects. This appropriation provides financial and technical assistance to rural communities to plan, design, and construct water and sewer system improvements. And there are two allocations within that appropriation. That's on your page number 3 and 4. About 40% of this appropriation is for, or $20,600,000 will be used for expansions, upgrades, and replacement of existing services. 60%, again, that's the page number 3 on the detail sheet. 60%, $30,900,000 for the funding of, will be used for providing first-time service to communities. The next project is, again, it's on your page number 5, $2,692,800 for a drinking water capitalization grant subsidy. The funds are provided by EPA, and it is a federal requirement that we provide subsidy to receive this federal grant. The next one is, again, it's on your page number 6. It is $704,000. It's a clean water capitalization grant subsidy. Again, just like the previous one, the funding is provided by EPA. It is to provide subsidy to communities. The next one is, again, it's on page number 7. It is a request for $34,009,037, and that is for the Municipal Matching Grants and Matching Grants Program. This appropriation provides funding to plan, design, and construct drinking water and sanitation facilities. This appropriation has about 15 projects in the list. Mr. Chairman, I can go over the list if you like, or I can go to the next appropriation.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Thank you. The next one is page number 24, it's a request for $3 million for the statewide contaminated sites cleanup. And this is for assessment, cleanup, and monitoring activities at high-risk contaminated sites. This includes both state-owned sites and state-led sites. State-led sites are those privately owned properties. We are not able to find the identify the responsible party. Again, the work includes site assessment, cleanup, and monitoring to protect public health and the environment from discharges of oil and hazardous substances. Mr. Chairman, the next project is, it's on your page number 26. It is a $5 million request for the village safe water, new technology approaches or Band-Aid project. At this point, I would like Mr. Griffith to provide an overview to the committee.
Okay, very well.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Bill Griffith, and I'm the Facility Programs Manager in the Division of Water, Department of Environmental Conservation. This appropriation totals $5 million and would come from state general funds. This appropriation would be used to develop new technologies that are less expensive to build and operate. It would also be used for projects to protect existing infrastructure and extend the longevity of aging systems. If the committee desires, I can describe each of these efforts in more detail.
It's not necessary. Unless committee members do have questions, and we'll ask that at the end. Is that everything?
You want to go for this one? Mr. Chairman, the last one is it's on page 27. It's reappropriating EMT balances from completed municipal matching grants projects. EMT is the engineering management and travel. These are completed projects, reappropriating to projects that does not have sufficient funding. Again, that funding will be used to complete the municipal matching grants, same types of projects. Mr. Chairman, that concludes our overview. We'll be happy to take any questions.
Okay, very good. Thank you. I actually have a couple questions. I know the goal, I think it was actually Governor Knowles, when he was governor, he had a goal of no more honey buckets. How close are we of reaching that goal?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to call my lifeline.
Okay.
For the record, Bill Griffith, Facility Programs Manager in the Department of Environmental Conservation. Mr. Chairman, we've come a long way since the overall effort began 50 years ago, but still today, roughly 6,000 homes lack running water and sewer. That's about 8% overall of rural communities if you count the larger regional hubs. It's about 25% of homes if you don't count those regional hubs.
Okay, very good. And what part of the state is this? Northwest, Southwest?
Mr. Chairman, there are unserved homes throughout the state, but the majority of them are in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta and in the interior.
Okay, thank you. And then my next question is the debris from the tsunami in Japan. I think you have received some money from the federal government, or it's forthcoming. Is that enough? And do we need to add some general fund? And how big a problem is that?
Mr. Chairman, we are expecting approximately $1 million from NOAA, from the government of Japan. We have not received that funds yet. We are working on that. I don't have any more details at this point, but we can get back to you.
Okay. I would like to get a handle on that, and I understand there's still more forthcoming, I believe, so for both debris and perhaps money. So I think that's something I'd be interested in. Senator Bishop.
Very brief. On 54473 on the $5 million for the R&D efforts, I would just hope that the department would take careful consideration of looking in-state for that technology first, and because there is quite a bit of it in state.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, we will absolutely be expecting that any effort that's undertaken would require the involvement and participation of in-state firms. They have the expertise. They understand the problem better than anybody, I think.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, along those lines, for the systems that have been designed and put into the villages over the last many years, are the systems designed to be able to be maintained by folks in the village themselves and at a cost that's affordable for the folks that live there?
Senator Dunleavy, through the chair, yes, all of these systems, once they're completed, are operated and maintained by local residents. There's no financial assistance provided for operation and maintenance costs. We do provide technical assistance and training. Over the years, the cost of operating these systems has increased quite substantially along with the capital costs. So we don't undertake a project to construct a facility unless we believe it's feasible and sustainable for that community to operate it. But in recent years, as everybody knows, the cost of fuel in particular has increased quite a lot, and we find that a lot of communities are struggling now to be able to operate and maintain their existing systems.
Follow-up. Quick follow-up. Is there a record of any of the systems ceasing to function because of a lack of funds or technical assistance?
Senator Dunleavy, through the chair. No, at this point, every system that's been constructed is continuing to operate. They have periods sometimes where service isn't delivered because of emergencies, freeze-ups in the winter, and so on. But at this point, everything's operating.
Okay. Additional questions? Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you speak to me about the loan forgiveness on page 5 and 6? Who's receiving those loan forgivenesses, and how is that affecting the federal dollars that we're receiving? It looks like we're forgiving $3 million between the two appropriations.
Senator Fairclough, through the chair. Until 2010, no expenditure appropriation from the legislature was necessary for these funds, because when loans were issued, 100% of the loan was repaid. Beginning in 2010, federal appropriations law required that the state subsidize a certain percentage of loans to communities by forgiving a portion of the principal. You may be aware that these state revolving loan funds are national programs. And I know there was a lot of discussion at the national level about the opportunity for communities across the country to be able to receive a small portion of these funds and have the principal forgiven. And like I said, that occurred in 2010. And in Alaska, we elect to provide the minimum amount required by law as subsidy. They allow for a certain range to be forgiven, and we only, at this point, forgive the minimum allowed by federal requirements.
Follow?
Mr. Chairman, so if I heard you correctly, we were running a good program where everyone was repaying. We have already a 30% match that the state puts up, and then the federal government decided that we would put up an additional match based on a subsidy, repayment required.
Senator Fairclough, through the chair, the funds that we receive each year from EPA are used to help to replenish and to add to the balance of the fund. Most of the money coming that we provide every year in loans is based on repayments and interest on the loan funds. But a portion of the amount, the capitalization amount that we receive each year from EPA, we're now required to provide as a subsidy. The majority of each capitalization amount still goes out and is repaid by communities, but a small portion is required to be provided as principal forgiveness.
Mr. Chairman, it's just beyond me to actually understand that methodology, but I'll let it go. Thank you.
Okay. You may want to do a follow-up on that, Senator Fairclough.
We will.
Okay, additional questions for Department of Environmental Conservation? Seeing none, okay. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Okay, I think instead of taking a little break here, we'll just continue on. I have next on my agenda anyway, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and we should have Mathieu Pierre, Deputy Commissioner, as well as Jolynn Luther, Deputy Director for Admin Services, and looks like both of you are here. Welcome to the committee, and the floor is yours. I would just remind you that as you switch back and forth, if you would put on the record your name and affiliation. Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mathieu Pierre, Deputy Commissioner, DMVA, and Mr. Jolynn Luther will be presenting for us, and I'll be answering any questions should the committee members have them. So with that, Mr. Luther.
Jolynn Luther, Division Operations Manager for Division of Administrative Services for DMVA. Our request is $30,907,900. That is a GF match of $2,909,500 and general funds of $9,376,900 and federal receipts of $18,621,500. The first appropriation is the Interior Alaska Veterans Cemetery, reference number 47882. This project continues the acquisition of land for a veterans cemetery in Interior Alaska, and it's for general funds of $2,500,000. The next appropriation is Army Guard Facilities Projects, reference number 42900. Army Guard Facility Projects in Bethel, Delta Junction, Dillingham, Fairbanks, Fort Greeley, Wasilla, and on Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson will support soldiers of the Alaska National Guard, meet contractual requirements, and protect military assets. This is for federal receipts of $1,881,000, GF match of $480,000, and general funds of $4,369,000 for a total of $6,730,000. The next appropriation is for National Guard Counter Drug Support. This is reference number 42898. This program participates in the U.S. Department of Justice Asset Forfeiture Program. This federal program's primary purpose is to deter crime by depriving criminals of profits and proceeds from their illegal activities. The next appropriation is State Homeland Security Grant Programs, reference number 42901. The state of Alaska receives state homeland security grants from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. These grants provide programs across the state for homeland security planning, equipment, and emergency training exercises. These funds address issues of life, safety, and protection of infrastructure and are necessary for effective citizen preparedness, local first response, and statewide emergency preparedness. This is federal receipts of $9,500,000. Next appropriation is the Alaska Aerospace Corporation Maintenance, reference number 57102. Mission critical maintenance projects are needed at the Kodiak Launch Complex. These projects address issues of life safety, systems recertification, equipment repairs, and corrosion control. This is general funds of $900,000. Next appropriation is the Alaska Aerospace Corporation Kodiak Launch Complex, reference number 57114. A weather balloon station is needed that will adequately fit larger balloons and meet storage requirements. The project will increase Alaska Aerospace Corporation's ability to capture mission-critical meteorological data and reduce the risk of equipment damage and mission failure. General funds of $165,400. And finally, deferred maintenance, renewal, repair, and equipment. Reference number 49583. The Department of Military and Veterans Affairs has deferred maintenance, renewal, and repair needs in facilities across Alaska. Projects focus on building repair and renovation with an emphasis on fire, safety, and protection of structures. federal receipts of $7,140,500, GF match of $2,429,500, and general funds of $1,442,500.
Okay, thank you. Very, very good. Thank you for that presentation. Questions? Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you tell me, is sequestration hitting us at the Department of Veterans and Military Affairs at all?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, for the record, this is McHugh Pierre. The answer is yes, but we don't know to what level yet or if or when. Not very much likely will impact us. We do have some concerns for potential furlough for our federal civil service employees through our cooperative agreement. As you know, we do sign the cooperative agreement every 3 years with the DOD, and that allows us to have certain employees paid by the federal government that are just like your employees at BLM, FEMA, anyone else. So there's 22 days of furlough that's being discussed between April and September. When you look at our programs in the Guard activity-wise, we're cooperative, or we're linked with the active duty very closely, so we don't have a lot of room for reduction because we are so mission critical. So that's why we're not going to see very much of an impact in that lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. McHugh, thank you, sir, for coming here today. Could you just give me just a brief overview where we're at on the cemetery in Fairbanks, please?
Certainly. Through the chair, Senator Bishop, as you know, we've been looking at land in Fairbanks, in the interior region, I should say, for a veteran cemetery. It is the only area that is qualifies under the VA state cemetery program. The VA does not build national cemeteries anymore. They build state cemeteries where the state has to put up the land. Then the VA builds it. We have a small match, which they end up paying back, and then we operate the cemetery for the life of it. That cemetery allows veterans to receive their full burial benefits, headstones. It has the look and feel of an Arlington cemetery. We've spent the last 3 years searching for land. We've worked with everybody, the University Land Trust, the city, the boroughs, the DNR. We've asked for volunteers to donate land, and we thought we had a good piece. We had last year we did core sampling on a piece of DNR land, the only one that we found would work, because we need about 100 acres. We'd like more, but 100 acres would work for us, and it came up all full of permafrost. So now we've realized if we do need to move forward with this project, we'll have to purchase land from somebody, and we think that that cost amount is going to be around $2.5-3 million.
Thank you.
Senator Dunleavy?
Through the chair, just briefly, is there a practice in which your department regarding cemeteries, again, would partner with other cemetery initiatives where one part is for the military and one part is for civilians?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, we're going to partner with local cemetery operators to do the maintenance and the operations of the cemetery, but through the VA's rules and regulations for veteran cemeteries, we cannot partner with a cemetery in that fashion as far as existing space. You have to have a minimum of 40 acres, preferably more, to have an existing lifespan of the cemetery. Could it happen? Theoretically, yes. We don't have that opportunity in the interior region to make that type of partnership happen. We have explored it.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question goes to armories. I see on page 19 we have several armories that are being addressed to deferred maintenance. What role do armories have? And with the demolition of the Bethel Armory, how is that role going to be addressed?
Certainly, through the chair, Senator Hoffman. I'll address the Bethel Armory first. We do have a requirement to build armories, produce armories in our federally recognized drilling locations. So when National Guard Bureau, the DOD, says, yes, this is an authorized place for Guard members to drill, we have a requirement for them to have a place to muster. In Bethel, we transitioned into a new armory that was built, and we have a beautiful facility right downtown with a gym that the school shares with us, and we would prefer not to have to demolish that. We do have an increment in the budget to cover that cost, the match cost, or 100% GF. We're hopeful that we'll have match, but we just got word from the school district, the superintendent, that the school board has asked to receive that building from us, and they're currently working with the city. So if that does go through, we will not need that money after all. But we don't know if that's the sure case yet, Senator.
And the life expectancy, I was told that that has a life expectancy of another 30 years?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, that's correct. We do believe there is a significant life expectancy on that building. 30 years is about right, because we have been very diligent in our maintenance on that. And when it comes to other armories in the region and across the state, we have a significant number of buildings, more than 300 in about 76 locations. And those are critical for communities to gather. They could be points of emergency response. They're also an ability for that community to have drilling guard members who add not only skills to the economy, but additional money into the economy as well, certainly on a part-time basis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Additional questions? I know I had some on the Alaska Aerospace, but we met, and you've answered my questions on that facility. I appreciate you spending the time to meet with us on a one-to-one basis. That makes the committee process go quicker. Anything else from committee members for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs? Seeing none, thank you very much for your time. Okay, well, that concludes our overviews for today. Our next meeting, of course, is tomorrow at 9 o'clock, and we'll have Department of Labor and Workforce Development. I'm sure Senator Bishop will have some questions there. And Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. So both are pretty big groups, but we should be able to get through both of them tomorrow. If there's nothing else to come before the committee, we're adjourned.